Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
The ABC Sunday Night Movie presents the most spectacular space adventure ever filmed. Transport yourself in time to a star system far beyond our own galaxy.
Core systems transferring control to probe craft. Launch when ready.
Battlestar Galactica, a saga of a star world.
I got him on the left. I got him on the right.
That is precision flying.
For a thousand years, a race of alien machines has been bent on destruction of the human race.
They hate us with every fiber of their existence.
And now their evil plans may become reality.
It's dangerous around here.
Why do those people want to hurt us? What do we do to them?
It's not what we did to them. It's what they fear we could do.
Join the last remnants of the human race in a quest for a new world.
13th colony. This other world. Where is it and what is it called?
Earth.
And be there for the ultimate confrontation.
Enemy closing, 30 microns.
But if you're wrong...
25 microns.
I'm not wrong.
15 microns.
Cylons lured me into their deception once.
Closing in, 5 microns.
Never again.
Battlestar Galactica.
There are those who believe that life here began out there, far across the universe, with tribes of humans who may have been the forefathers of the Egyptians, or the Toltecs, or the Mayans, that they may have been the architects of the Great Pyramids, or the lost civilizations of Lemuria, or Atlantis. Some believe that there may yet be brothers of man who even now fight to survive far, far away amongst the stars.
Delegates, I realize you are all anxious to get back to your ships before our rendezvous with the Cylons, but I think it appropriate to toast the most significant event in the history of mankind. I would like to raise my chalice to you. Not merely as the quorum of 12, representing the 12 colonies of man, but as my friends, the greatest leaders ever assembled. As we approach the seventh millennium of time, the human race at last will find peace. Thanks to you.
Peace.
Well, the extraordinary dulcet tones of Patrick McNee, of course, heard there in that little trailer for this week's episode of Resonance Rewind, which goes back to 1978, and indeed that ragtag fleet that effectively is the last remnants of mankind or humanity, with, of course, Lorne Greene in full position. But let's find out what the Resonance Rewind team make of course, the three-parter in some ways, or two-parter, or indeed mini motion picture that was Glenn Larson's production of Battlestar Galactica. Victoria Simmons, your thoughts, please.
I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was interesting to see it from the other way the other perspective. So you're going from the people that are away from Earth coming back to Earth rather than everybody on Earth trying to get out.
I mean, certainly there were lots of resonances given that this was some 30 years or so after Pearl Harbor. And of course, the shockwaves that that sent through the American psyche. Plus, of course, we had the Battle of the Bulge. We had lots of World War references in terms of the fighter pilots, the aircraft carrier nature of the battle stars themselves, of course. And perhaps something quite unique, I think, at the time, which was very, very much a case of the lead people almost being defeated. No hope, we hear at one stage given in terms of how this thing is actually operating. Of course, there is a nod, some might say, to the contemporary world of artificial intelligence and ChatGPT and the challenges that actually occur with respect to that. What's going to happen to the Daggett? Now he's actually effectively become a creation of cyborg and cybernetics and so on and so forth. Ian Barnsley, welcome back to, of course, Resonance Rewind, your second from this point of view. And for the benefit of the listener, I will say that he's obviously referencing Dirk Benedict in the A-Team in his backdrop there, known, of course, for the opening sequence where Cylon does actually wander past the character Faceman played by Dirk Benedict and showing that connection that, of course, would continue to resonate until Ron Moore reinvented and reevaluated the series in the 21st century. But as we're also joined, I think, by one of the key authors, the co-authors of By Your Command, the actual textbook go-to when it comes to analyzing Battlestar Galactica. We'll find out more from Fiona in a few seconds. Let's turn to yourself, Ian, and your thoughts on this particular episode.
I loved watching it again. I mean, I did watch it many, many moons ago. I loved watching it again. And even from the very off with the theme music really grabs you at the beginning of the episode. It was good stuff. It just reminds me of what it was like. I mean, I hopefully at some point you're going to ask me who my favorite character is, and I just remember you playing it as a young lad,
Yeah, that's
as
definitely
members of Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, that definitely will be coming through. Okay, let's turn to Jessica Burtis, key in terms of the whole analysis of the system. I think, Victoria, this was the first time you'd actually seen Battlestar Galactica. Is that right?
Yes, and I haven't seen the new version either.
Okay. Jessica Burtis, also, I think, a first time for your good self that you've encountered this Glenn Larson production. Your thoughts, please.
Yeah, I don't know how this is the first time I've ever had to like get involved with Battlestar Galactica because there's been so many iterations of it, so I don't know how I've missed it. And my dad watched it when he was growing up, but I think the similarities between Star Wars, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica are all very overt. It's very clear seeing them how similar they all are, but it's a space opera. It's like it's just fun. I think anything in this genre is something that I enjoy. And I love when you have a big cast of characters on a ship together. There is something so entertaining about having a bunch of personalities all having to deal with one another while being pursued by this enemy that is dead set on just getting rid of all of them. I don't know, it's just very interesting. It's very high stakes, but then it feels very personal. So I think the show is very different from Star Wars, even though aesthetically it's very similar, and that's what I immediately thought. It definitely is its own thing, and I think that I would want to watch the whole series, actually.
Oh, interesting. Again, from the first timer. Okay, we mentioned Professor Fiona Moore, who would be joining
Yeah,
us, and I
sorry.
think the Cylons haven't connected her, haven't sort of hindered that. So, Fiona, obviously, together with Alan Stevens, you wrote what I still maintain is an absolutely essential, although albeit unofficial, although it does have a wonderful foreword by Richard Hatch in the sort of text By Your Command. Let's just talk about that legal thing that Jessica sort of raised there in terms of the lawsuits that were flying
Oh,
back and
yeah.
forth between obviously Lucasfilm and 20th Century Fox and Universal, etc. Like Jessica, I mean, unlike I saw it in 1978 and I thought, no, I don't. I mean, yeah, they're both set in space, but other than that, they're fundamentally different narratives, different texts, surely. Anyway, Fiona.
Yeah, I mean that section was actually one of the most fun to write, as far as I'm concerned, in the in that book. You know, the section on the lawsuit, particularly because I learned an awful lot about how the lawsuits worked at the time, because it was a lot more, you know, the simple story that you see in the summaries is, Battlestar Galactica was sued for similarities to Star Wars. Hello, Aisha. Sorry, my cat's just joined us for
your at listeners. Least Aisha's not a Daggett. That's the important thing. So we're good as far as that's concerned. Yes, no.
I do have a Daggett army, actually, a Daggett army of three. But we can talk about that later on in the podcast if you like. But anyway, the thing about the it's not quite as simple as they were sued for similarities to Star Wars, but in terms of are they similar, one of the okay, so the thing is that at the time, studios routinely sued each other if there was even the tiniest possibility of similarity. Like, you know, a studio that's not MGM puts out a movie with a giant animal in it, and they promptly sue for resemblances to King Kong. You know, it was just kind of routine, and they usually got settled out of court. The Battlestar Galactica one just wound up attracting an awful lot of publicity because, first of all, of the genre, and secondly, because there was a second lawsuit ongoing involving somebody having a child having been fatally injured with a Battlestar Galactica toy. But why I'm going into this detail is that one of the key points that was made by Universal in their part of the lawsuit was that a lot of what they're dealing with is Universals. You know, you've got a hero and a sidekick and on a journey that's taking him to some strange and epic places. That goes back to the Epic of Gilgamesh, you know. It's not something that's unique to either series. And, you know, Lucas himself, when he was doing it, talked about how he drew on the hero's journey and all this classical mythology. So, yeah, of course, there's similarities. But as you say, Jessica, there's an awful lot of differences between them. You know, you can't really line up Apollo and Starbuck and say Luke Skywalker and Han Solo. There's so many differences between them. And, you know, just the way in which Battlestar Galactica, for instance, draws on Mormon beliefs as well and, you know, plays with them and Greek mythology and plays with that. And, you know, it does go in a lot of directions that Lucas didn't.
Glenn Larson also received an awful lot of flack over the years for being somebody who effectively would take movie successes and then turn them into TV series, etc. I do know that this was something that the late Gene Roddenberry actually shared with me in person, that he actually felt that, you know, there were issues with respect to that. And yet, in some ways, this is far more the wagon train to the stars motif than Star Trek ever was, even though that was what was originally sold to the network sponsors, that Star Trek was wagon train to the stars, etc. Here we have almost a wagon train from the stars, which in many ways would foreshadow the likes of Stargate SG-1, Babylon 5, and other kind of outlandish or indeed out there space operas. Victoria, we'll turn back to yourself again, because I'm intrigued again, first time around that you've seen this. How did you feel the narrative unfolded? And did you actually go for the full three episodes, the full kind of balance from this side of things in terms of the tale itself?
I went for the long one version. So maybe that's different from what other people have watched, but I found that one to watch. And I can see how splitting it into the three parts was probably a good idea, because as a one long almost we'll say film, it left out a lot of the intrigue, which I think you would have in different if it was cut up into different sections, because it's very long. I think it's 2 hours and 19 minutes as a full film. And I think if you hit, the intrigue was lost on that one, but you still managed to find all these different elements of, okay, so now that they're being attacked in this direction, but now they're being drawn in on this direction, and how, what if, I liked was when they were getting all the men in different suits and trying to outplay the robots, if you like. And I thought that was a really intriguing idea to show that we are different from all these, the AI technology.
I mean, Ian, if I can turn to your good self, of course, I mean, Saga of a Star World, which was the title given, which, again, it was the worthwhile, the title, I think it was used certainly for viewers in America. I suspect, like myself, you might well have seen this in the cinema, first and foremost, long before it actually appeared on television.
No, not me. I watched it on television first. I didn't watch it at the cinema. But I too think that it's better split into three rather than having one long. Although films these days generally do tend to be that long. I think, you know, a few years ago, that would have been very long for a film and would have been quite painful to be sat that long in a cinema watching it. So I think three episodes would be the way to go about with that.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't find it that long. I think I kind of picked up with the series when it emerged on Thursday evenings on the commercial channel ITV, probably around about late afternoon, 4:30 through 5:30 time slots. And again, you know, Fiona, that's an interesting line because this was very much the standard practice that if you had an American series which needed to recoup its money rapidly, it would be released theatrically overseas. Hence the reason, I suppose, that there was also that concern about, hang on, Star Wars were very successful in 77. This is also about space and stars, etc. So it's another variation on a theme.
Actually, I can tell you one little thing about the said the it's more complicated than that with the lawsuit, which is that Gary Kurtz was actually involved with the TV series early on. And the point at which he pulled out was the point at which Universal said they were going to do a movie cut to get overseas, you know, to get the overseas markets, which is interesting because that's the point at which it went from, you know, Glenn Larson doing his usual thing of filing the serial numbers off and doing a TV series to a possible competitor for the Star Wars franchise. So interesting enough, but yeah, I've seen all the cuts. Oh God, have I seen all the cuts? yeah, my thing, the reason why I agree that it works best as three parts is actually mostly to do with the pacing. You know, even when you cut it as a movie, you know, it's still got that feel of three parts, three 45-minute segments where, you know, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And, you know, so even shown as a movie, there is still this element. Yeah. Also, for the subsequent movies, not this one, but for the subsequent movies, there were bits that they put in that were a little more violent or sexually explicit. Just so that they could keep them for the movie cut, you know, because the movies were going out with a PG certificate. And anyway, because so they were like, you know, well, we'll put in some racy things we can't do on television, maybe boost the audience.
You see, Ian, all the good bits that you missed through not going to the cinema to see Battlestar Galactica, honestly. Let's look at some of the production people, of course. The Winrich Kolber, of course, was associate producer. Again, I think he went on to do various bits and pieces, if I recall, with The Next Generation in terms of Star Trek. Leslie Stevens, of course, very much Hollywood or science fiction royalty because of his connection with The Outer Limits. So again, there were some sort of worthwhile sort of souls within that. Jessica, turning back to your good self again, how did you feel the narrative unfolded? And again, did you watch three separate episodes? Did you watch various cuts on the whole thing? Was it Saga of a Star World? What was your choice?
I couldn't find it, the full length clip together. Maybe it's on like a British streaming service and I don't know. I couldn't, it was hard to find a full length one. But I think that the narrative is like we were saying, it's very different from Star Wars, even though the aesthetic is so similar. I think the idea of kind of like something coming after humanity and humanity having to hold out and be these underdogs and then having to find some lost group in another world. I think that's a very interesting narrative that you see a lot in sci-fi, but I honestly don't mind it because it's always so fun. And I think there's a lot of different ways to make it unique. And I think Battlestar Galactica being so popular is a like there's a reason why it's so popular. I think that often characterization plays a massive role in the success of that narrative, because if you have a plot that's kind of formulaic, then it becomes really reliant on characters being the driving force behind it. And I think that seems true with this one. And I do think that you can see kind of Glenn Larson's the Mormon themes in there with the lost tribe and there being a traitor to humanity and that kind of thing, and something pursuing the destruction of mankind. So that was kind of interesting to like try and read into once I found out about that. But I think it's a very interesting idea with how kind of it's set in our world and that the lost humans are on Earth. Like that kind of changed it, because I thought it was a whole different universe, like a whole mythical place. So that makes it so much more interesting, the idea that it's actually our galaxy. I think that's really fun.
Intriguing in terms of again the associations we have with characters. And again, Ian, I suspect I might be the senior citizen in this particular one, because my biggest association with Lorne Greene, Canadian actor, of course, so very much part of Fiona as land from that point of view, was as Ben Cartwright in Bonanza, which he was very much the paternal figure. And this might sound a little bit controversial, but I even would tend to say that I tended to prefer his incarnation of Commander Adama as opposed to Edward James Olmos, which I thought was a little bit harsh in the Ron Moore remake. But that's another issue. Ian, back to yourself again in terms of how the narrative developed and what attracted you to the series both then and now.
I think what attracted me to the series was the characters other than the main characters. I mean, I've always been quite happy to follow the likes of Boomer and Colonel Ty and even Baltar as a character. They've been the ones that have stood out for me rather than Starbuck and Apollo. As for Lorne Greene, yeah, I remember him from Bonanza, but he does make a real father figure in the show as the leader. That they're all following. But as for Edward Olmos, you're very different, but also very good as well in their own different ways. Very, very different in what they do.
Okay, so let's start talking characters. We're moving into that particular area. Victoria, where are you going to go? Who stood out for your good self? Was it indeed the character Baltar, of course, played by John Colicos, who is known, of course, as being a Klingon in the original Star Trek series, Klingon Commander Kaur? Or was it indeed the Imperious leader, played by Patrick McNee, of course? Are you going to go for the president, foreshadowing, some might say, Joe Biden, in terms of his thoughts that are played by Lou Ayres? Or is it Ray Milland? I mean, there are so many that you can go through, but where are you going to suggest?
No, actually, I'm going slightly different on this one. I quite liked the robotic dog and the idea of our pets and taking those into the AI, and I don't know, it was slightly different. So I actually go with that.
Yeah, so Muffet, I think it's Muffet
Muffet,
who
there we
plays
go.
the Daggett, the pet of Boxy. I'm not quite sure about the name Boxy, but what the heck. I mean, again, the other aspect, the religious aspects, come
Later
across.
canon is that it's a nickname.
This is true. You could also argue that, of course, Adama, Adam, the biblical connection that I felt, obviously, there's the Moses-like connection on that side of things, and the word went out, and all of the starships gathered together and worked through that. Jessica, who would you opt for in terms of favorite characters?
I mean, I also love the robot a lot, not as much as the Tribbles or as much as the Rover Bubble from The Prisoner, but still adorable. But I think Starbuck and Apollo were really entertaining characters, and I have to say the costumes, I really like the costumes. I thought they were great, and I think that like that's been my opinion a lot, because I don't know, I want the costume so bad. I want to be one of Starbuck or Apollo. Like it just seems so fun.
Well, of course, there's always Maren Jensen's character of the other the daughter of Adama, effectively, who again, has clearly got a thing for Dirk Benedict's incarnation of Starbuck, which again I think was quite extraordinary in terms of the way that things were being played out, etc. I mean, it's very much an ensemble cast. I mean, an ensemble cast actually before Hill Street Blues started its ensemble cast, and of course Ed Begley Jr., who appears here, would appear in Saint Elsewhere, and that huge cast numbers. Maybe that's one of the reasons, together with the special effects, it was too expensive to take to a second season. Again, lots of thoughts with respect to that. But Fiona, what about yourself in terms of characters?
Yeah, well, let's also not forget that these days, when there's such a fashion for a found family space opera, you know, these guys kind of preceded it with, you know, a found family, a blended family. You know, Adama is a father figure to most of the characters. And, you know, it can be easy to forget if you're not following the continuity that, you know, Boxy is not Apollo's biological child. And, you know, that... yes, but so in terms of the characters, though, I would also like to do a shout out to the women, you know, because I think Cassiopeia is great. You know, the idea of having a sex worker from a different culture where sex workers are not ostracized, you know, is a great idea.
A socialiter.
Yes, socialiter. Yep. And then she becomes a nurse, you know, obviously because the network were nervous about it. But at the same time, yeah, you know, same sorts of skills. Somebody who's good at putting people at their ease and, you know, is not afraid to deal with the intimate. Serena, you know, and later on Sheba, you know, avoid the cat food jokes, but you know, yeah, Apollo's two love interests, you know, both similar in some ways but also very different and very well characterized, you know, they're you couldn't confuse the one with the other.
It's interesting, in terms of Serena, I was often wondering whether Jane Seymour, whether she thought she'd made a mistake. Probably not, because she went on to become Dr. Quinn, medicine woman. And of course, this was probably her first major incursion following, of course, the success of Live and Let Die, another program we'll be looking at in a few weeks' time, and indeed her time on the Enidian line. So interesting line there. Okay, so an interesting one for that. We've got to wait. We're over to yourself, Ian, in terms of characterizations there.
For me, the most interesting character is Baltar, and John Colicos, his performance of Baltar. I just like the deviousness of him. He's always thinking behind the scenes of what's going on, and he's obviously planned all this all the way through. But I just like the fact that when the Cylons attack and the leader's on the screen talking to Adama, Baltar's nowhere to be seen because he's legged it. He's absolutely just gone because he's done all he needs to do, and he's set the seeds in motion, and off it went. And how someone could just betray the entire human race, I really don't know. But that's what he's done.
It's intriguing that we have, of course, a foreshadowing towards the end of this particular show of Lucifer, who's voiced by Jonathan Harris, who, of course, portrays the character of Zachary Smith in Lost in Space. Mm-hmm. Somehow I feel that actually the 1960s Lost in Space, Zachary Smith would have probably been much better if they'd had the elements that John Colicos had actually put into Baltar in terms of that deviousness that was actually around from there. But again, an interesting crossover. Let's talk music. Music, of course, we have the disco sequence with the insect planet and the entertainment there, and obviously Starbuck thinks he's going to actually become a manager of the equivalent of the Supremes or Three Degrees within all sorts of ways. Did you feel that was kind of shoehorned in, or was it a case, or did you feel there was a genuine kind of aspect about that which really worked? Victoria.
Oh, me, sorry. No, I loved it when they came in and it was the Three Degrees or Supremes. I thought maybe Supremes, but that to me was really fun. It was sort of made a completely different dynamic. So you're going to a different planet, so you know it's completely different because of the music change. And I think that was really good. Otherwise, the music throughout the whole thing was actually very good.
Oh. And I think Glenn Larson,
like Ian said at the beginning, it drew you into the program.
I mean, that theme, once again, possibly controversial here, Fiona, and we haven't looked at the Ron Moore versions yet, but I feel that the insistent drums of Battlestar Galactica, the post-2001 version, it's good, and it very much is of its time, but this kind of triumphant march was really effective. How did you find the music?
Yeah, well, I mean, some things are, you know, of their time, as you say, but, you know, you've sort of got to accept it and roll with it. It was the 70s, you know, there's a disco number, hooray, you know, how sweet, you know, as you said, you know, even now already, you know, the kind of world music, Bear McCreary stuff is starting to be very clearly of its time. And within that, I'd say the closest equivalent to the disco number would probably be that, was it Wander My Friends, you know, the kind of overly, you know, Irish ballad pastiche that comes in later in the end. I'm just, as soon as it comes on, I'm like, oh God, no, you know, bring the Cylons on, please. You know, if there ever was a reason to destroy Caprican civilization, it's this ballad, you know. But yeah, it's it evokes a time, it evokes a mood, you know, it there has a you know, it really does the job, you know.
We talked briefly about Athena, Marin Jensen, who, again, I thought the material she had on screen was perfectly competent, good, well sorted through, etc. It would seem, Fiona, from your research together with Alan, of course, in this, that Marin wasn't necessarily the best or viewed by the producers and the directors being necessarily the best choice for this. Was it just clever editing that effectively shows us her best bit, shall we say?
So to speak, yes. Well, yeah, they didn't. They were unhappy with her performance, and yeah, I think first of all, there was an awful lot of directorial work. As you noted, they did have a very good. They recruited some very good directors for this thing who were able to get a good performance from her, and you know, and to be fair, as I recall, she was a. It's one of these things where, you know, she comes in from modeling, not from acting, and so it's. Yeah,
well, I'm still going to say yeah. Marin Jensen as Athena will get my vote as favourite character because I thought she managed to emote with the right level of emotion when she'd lost her brother.
Yeah, and I do tend to feel, you know, dodgy about saying, you know, kind of, you know, bad performance from so-and-so, even though I will, because there are so many things that can affect an actor's performance, you know, if they're, and sometimes if there's conflict between them and the producer or the director, you know, it's not their fault. It just winds up really affecting their performance when they're on screen. So, yeah, I've got mixed feelings. On the one hand, I can't say that for them, you know, they're, are a lot of episodes where she is kind of, you know, not on par with the rest of the cast. But on the other hand, you know, I don't really know what her story is on that. So, you know, these things happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And probably still continue to do that. Okay. We're coming around to the notion of actually providing that quantitative score on a qualitative scenario. I mean, it's inevitable. Yes. I know we don't necessarily like working through this, but it's what's there. So, Jessica, let's come to you first. As you actually very much took the title away from both Johnny Bill, and indeed Robin Pierce as being curmudgeonly on the last one, which was quite shocking when you actually awarded the Star Trek episode, The Immunity Syndrome, a measly 3 out of 10. What's your take on this one?
I think this one was a lot more fun, a lot better. So I'd give this an 8. I'm a sucker for space narratives with a big found family. So this is something that's my kind of cup of tea. I liked it a lot.
Excellent. Victoria?
Yeah, I was going for a 7. But I think if I'd have watched it in the way it was intended with the three parts over 3 weeks, then it would have been an 8 with that anticipation in between.
Yes, the challenge these days where we can entertain ourselves to death, amuse ourselves to death, and simply binge watch, perhaps it does lose something in the translation. Okay, Ian.
Always love Battlestar Galactica. And those episodes were good. I'd probably give it 8 as well. I was thinking a 9, but well, not particularly impressed with the insect stuff that was going on a little bit later on in the episodes.
Well, overall, all things considered, and I probably when I first saw it would have said 7, 7.5. I've moved it up over the years, and I am going to go for a 9 because I think actually in terms of the quality of the model making, in terms of the performances, in terms of the messages that were coming through, in terms of the foreshadowing of a whole range of other aspects, and indeed bringing to the fore a new form of almost dystopian science fiction, I think a credit to the team for actually putting the process together. Fiona?
I'm more inclined to an 8 because I don't really feel they stick the beginning terribly well. You know, if in terms of, you know, they do a good job, but, you know, in terms of what are the episodes that really stand out and really make me think, I tend to go a bit further down the season and think of things like War of the Gods, for instance. That having been said, I think knowing what I do about what was going on behind the scenes and the constraints they were working under, you know, I would say they did a really good job with what they had. You know, as I said, the team was strong behind the camera and in front of the camera. So I'd give it an 8.
And if people wish to actually do a deeper dive, obviously beyond IMDb and indeed Resonance Rewind, I would recommend your text, which is still presumably available by your command, yes. Both Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Yes, and indeed, if you want to do a deep dive that's beyond the heavens, you could.
Absolutely. Some outstanding work with respect to that. That has pretty much brought us to the end of our consideration, at least, of the opening sequence of Battlestar Galactica. Although I will actually leave with the intriguing line, of course, that Patrick McNee, whose voice we hear as the Cylon leader, also turns up, of course, as Count Ibley. And also, of course, we hear that whole notion, never quite sure in terms of where that was being played out. I mean, again, lots of theories, lots of awarenesses. And on a show in which Jessica Burtis has now actually revealed that it's a tie between Tribbles, the weather balloons / rovers in The Prisoner, and indeed the Daggett for best characters. It's quite extraordinary. Next week on Resonance Rewind, we'll be focusing on a show which has featured several folk who sadly are no longer with us, have appeared on past radio shows with me. Vladek Shabal has been part of that. Ed Bishop, of course, as well, was part of that whole thing. And indeed, somebody who I've sadly never worked with, but Fiona, you did work with, David Collings.
Yes.
Much missed David Collings. They're taking part in an episode of Gerry Anderson's UFO entitled The Psycho Bombs.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming up as far as Resonance Rewind is concerned. Professor Fiona Moore, huge thanks. Ian Barnsley, many thanks. Victoria Simmons, as ever, a delight. And likewise, Jessica Burtis. And nice to see, Jessica, that your dad also said that Lorne Greene was his favourite. So that's nice from that point of view. So good stuff there. But as ever, we wrap up before heading into some more music from Battlestar Galactica with those standard words. Keep on resonating. Thank you.
We'll be right back.